Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
The format of this meeting is we have a 10-minute speaker first, and then we have a short break, and then the main speaker of the evening. And it's a real pleasure to introduce our 10-minute speaker, John M.
My name's John, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome our 11 newcomers tonight and to anyone that is new and didn't introduce yourselves. You know, if you've got a problem with alcohol and drugs, you know, this is a place to be. And when I introduce myself as an alcoholic, that means that I've lost the ability to control my drinking. I've got a physical allergy to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. For me, that didn't mean that I had to end up on Skid Row, spend any time in real jail, get divorced a whole bunch of times. It just meant that, you know, alcohol and the way I was living was, you know, essentially screwing up my life. You know, I look back and, you know, I had a very normal childhood. You know, there was no deep, dark things there that would have made me turn out to be alcoholic or anything I drank for or against or anything like that. I do remember, though, that, you know, I did suffer from some fears, you know, that, and I don't know if those are any different than any normal child goes through. I just know that those fears, you know, helped me quite a bit later to achieve my alcoholism. You know, one of the other things that, you know, it always seemed that a piece of the pie was missing. I didn't seem like I quite fit in. And, you know, no matter what I did or if I achieved something that I had set up to do, you know, still something was always missing. And I never understood that. I was introduced to alcohol, you know, about 14 years old. At first, you know, alcohol did things for me. It took away that, it essentially made me feel okay. It made me able to go into social situations and to function. But very early on, you know, alcohol started to do things to me. It wasn't within my first four or five times of drinking, that I, you know, suffered blackouts. You know, at first, you know, the people I hung around, you know, that was just a normal thing that happened. I didn't think there was anything really strange about that. But it put me in a lot of embarrassing situations, and, you know, I knew at times that I just didn't drink like my friends did. You know, they didn't get sick, you know, every four or five times that they drank. You know, they didn't do some of the things that I did. You know, alcohol essentially, and the way I was living, it had a negative effect on just about every major area of my life. You know, any job I've ever had has been negatively affected by my drinking. You know, I was the type of person that didn't show up too much. You know, and that was always, you know, I lost two career type jobs through my drinking. You know, any relationship I ever had with a woman, you know, usually came down to, John, I love you, but I just can't handle your drinking, and I've got to get away from you. You know, I just can't watch you suffer through this. I very early on also, you know, realized that the problems I were having in some of these areas was due to my drinking. I remember taking the alcoholic test that, you know, is in the back of the room that I forget the group that puts that out. That, you know, the 20 question type thing. And I went through the first time and I answered it as honestly as I could. And, you know, I hit it on about 15 questions. And this was very, very early on. But at that time and what I struggled with for years and years, you know, almost probably 10 years, was the fact that, you know, I could, if I really wanted to do this, you know, could stop drinking anytime on my own. And I struggled with that for years and years and years. You know, at one time I used to play a lot of soccer, and that for me when I was younger, that was, you know, that was the thing that meant the most to me. And, you know, eventually when I was, going to college, you know, after 3 years, you know, there's just no way I could run 3 hours a day drinking the way I like to. You know, most of my education, you know, I did graduate. You know, I went to a school. It was a 4-year university. I graduated in 5 years by the skin of my teeth. You know, I didn't go to class very much. You know, springtime was hot and sunny, and there was baseball and swimming pool, and I played a lot of golf and drank a lot of beer. You know, a lot of people graduate summa cum laude or cum laude, and, you know, I graduated hey lottie lottie. You know, the many times I said to myself that this would be the last time. You know, I was never going to drink again. About 3 years ago, or actually 4 years ago now, I'm losing track of time here, I had 2 502s within 19 days. And, it was one of those things, you know, I went with a blood alcohol level of, you know, 0.34, was in a blackout, 0.34, I think you said that correctly. You know, I was wrestling around with 5 or 6 police officers, you know, which is not my MO. You know, when I came out of there, I was totally disgusted and said I'd never drink again. I didn't drink for 19 days, got into my car 19 days later and, you know, had the same results. That was the first time that I was exposed to AA. At the time, they were only giving 5 AA meetings, as part of the deal in an alcohol, class. And, you know, but during those 5 meetings, you know, I heard some things that were going to screw up the next 3 years of my drinking. One of the things that was important for me, there was a lady that had about, I don't know, 35 years of sobriety. You know, I couldn't understand. She, you know, I figured she must have been really, really sick to be there after 35 years. You know, I didn't realize that this was something that, you know, was going to be something that would be a part of the rest of my life. But she said that if you be alcoholic, that you were on the way to the dump. And you could get on or off anytime you wanted to. And that was, you know, your decision. And for me, that blew all the yet, you know, the yet syndrome, as far as I hadn't done this yet, I haven't done that yet. You know, it made me understand that I could have a problem with alcohol, but not necessarily hit the type of bottoms that I considered to be alcoholic. You know, I usually considered an alcoholic about one step lower than where I was functioning at that time. You know, if, I always consider, you know, an alcoholic was someone that couldn't make work, you know, and when I started missing work, well, then it was an alcoholic was someone that drank in the morning, or, you know, an alcoholic was someone who was on skid row eventually. That was about the last, anything above that was just a normal drinker. You know, during those 3 years, I made numerous attempts, you know, over and over again. Probably the longest time I could spend, sober was, I think there was a 7-week period at one point. And even, you know, during that time, I mean, I was miserable. All I was thinking about is, that I wasn't drinking. You know, I didn't know what I was going to be doing, you know, and the syndrome was also very same over and over again, you know, that after a period of time, I forget very quickly the pain that drinking was causing me. I'd get well, and I could decide that, well, you know, maybe I made a big mistake, and, I'd go back and try it again, and it might work for, you know, 3 or 4 times, but, you know, it was like, eventually, you know, towards the end, it was like playing Russian roulette, and someone was loading up extra bullets in the chamber, where each time I drank, you know, maybe every third time or every second time, you know, I'd find myself, in places I didn't want to be, a lot of strange things went on. About a year and, I guess about a year and a half ago, underneath some work problems, I decided that I would, you know, I would seek some help. You know, and the one thing, you know, if you're here tonight and you're new, you know, I've got some good news and some bad news. You know, the good news is that, you know, if you want to quit drinking and stop living the way you're living, you know, this program offers a solution for that. You know, the bad news is that, you know, for you and for me, it'd be a good idea that we don't drink or use drugs the rest of our lives. You know, this is a program of abstinence. And the other part that was, you know, even harder for me to palate at that time was the fact that I was going to need to take some direction. You know, and I was always a person that considered I could run my life. You know, I wanted to do things my way. You know, so for me to ask for help and to decide that, you know, I needed help and that someone was going to tell me how to live my life was not very easy. And, you know, I went to see a psychologist specialized in alcoholism. You know, I talked to him, and after about 20 minutes, he told me I was a textbook alcoholic, but he said I wasn't ready yet, you know, and I hit a couple meetings, and, you know, after a period of time, I decided my career was more important, and I was working 12 and 14-hour days, and, you know, there was a new lady in my life that was going to keep me sober. You know, so I stopped going to meetings, and, you know, at the time I was on antabuse, and after about 110 days, I was sitting up in a golf course outside San Francisco, and the weather was terrible, and my friends were drinking, and I put about three drives in the trees, and, you know, I said, life sucks, and this is time to start drinking again. And, you know, I proceeded, though, within about 3 months, you know, and towards the end, you know, physically, you know, I just couldn't take it. You know, I was the type of drinker, and, you know, I would go out on a Friday night and maybe drink normally and, you know, spend the Saturday and Sunday drinking, you know, or maybe two or three beers and I'd be drunk. And, you know, Monday morning I'd be throwing up sick and couldn't do anything and spend a day in bed. And, you know, physically the alcohol was taking a toll on me, and I saw that progress over time. You know, for a long time my tolerance went uphill, and where I could drink more and more, and, you know, eventually it took less and less for me to get drunk. And, you know, that was a physical allergy working. But I did, under some work problems, finally make a decision that I was going to give AA a try. You know, for me, the couple of things that scared me up front, you know, was the God thing. You know, I wasn't real thrilled about that one. You know, originally when I came to AA, you know, I considered this some type of offshoot of the Moonies. You know, I was very, very skeptical of the word God. You know, I'd been brought up in an established religion, and, you know, I had left that. It didn't seem to work for me. The other thing, you know, when I looked and I did listen, and people were talking about getting sponsors and going 90 meetings in 90 days. And, you know, I thought a meeting a day was a little severe. And also when I took a look at the steps, you know, step four didn't bother me too much. You know, I told my story to probably a bartender in the valley. But, you know, the step nine, the part about going back and making amends, and, you know, I had a lot of fear underneath that one. And when I heard that, you know, I made the mistake of going to a step meeting, and people got up and told these stories about the things that they had to do to stay sober. And I said, there is no way that I'm going to do that. And, but I came back this time, and I did say to myself that, you know, I was going to do anything that was suggested, and I'd be willing to do the things that were necessary. And, you know, and so far that's worked for me. And, you know, I have found a solution here. And, you know, and I did do the things that were suggested. You know, I went to a lot of meetings up front, and, you know, somewhere along the line, it got to the point where I wanted to come to meetings. You know, so if you're new, you know, I'd suggest 90 and 90, or, you know, come here till you want to be here. You know, very early on, you know, through the temporary sponsor thing that we offer here, you know, I was too, you know, arrogant and prideful and afraid at the time to go up and ask someone to be my sponsor. You know, I was hooked up with someone that got me involved in the steps. Also, a thing that's worked very quite a bit for me is he got me very involved in service right up front. And see, for me, it was a lot easier to go someplace and have something I had to do and then be able to interface with the people that were there rather than me try and go up and try and make friends and trying to meet people. And that was something that's been very important for me all the way along the line. You know, this program essentially, you know, it's given me that okay feeling that alcohol used to give me. You know, 90% of the time I probably feel good. You know, and the other 10% I'm either not doing something I'm supposed to be doing, or I'm just having a bad day. And, you know, I can live a lot better with the 10% than I could with the 90%. When I got here, I figured, you know, life had ended. You know, I was only going to be less miserable than I had been, and that's all I was looking for. And I sold this program unbelievably short. You know, it's given me friends that I, you know, never really had. You know, I had a lot of acquaintances. I knew a lot of people, but there was never anyone I could reach out to and tell that I was hurting or that I needed help. You know, that program offers that. You know, through the steps, you know, I learned a little bit about myself. You know, one of the biggest things that came out of that, you know, I hadn't really done anything different than half the people in this room. and that, you know, I was really most of the time just a good person trying to be bad, and I wasn't very good at being bad. And that was, you know, that was very important for me, you know, because I, at times, you know, I knew I was good at certain things, but I knew I was terrible at a lot of other things, and that was very important for me. You know, so if you're new, you know, and you want to do something about your life, if you want to quit your drinking, you know, we can't really do anything for you. You've got to want this. You know, this is a program of want, not necessarily need. You know, there's millions of people out there that need this program, but there's only a couple million that want it. And if you want it, you know, you can have essentially anything you want. You can have the peace of mind that, you're looking for. You know, your life can work better than it ever has. So again, welcome to the newcomers, and thank you very much.
Yeah, love me. Hi, my name is Paul, and I too am an alcoholic. It's my job as a speaker, from what I can understand, to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. Wait a minute now. This is serious stuff. We got to start off right, okay? I guess to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. We can get done with that real quick and get on with the dance, okay? Oh, we're at live. We don't have no dance at live. It was shitty. I found AA, and it's beautiful today. Simplicity, that's really what happened. But let me get into what it was like, okay? For the first 11 years of my life, I was clean and sober. That's a long time from some of the stories I've heard, okay? That's right. From around here, as a matter of fact. When I turned 12 years old, I found alcohol, tobacco, and sex. Yeah, all right, it was real fun being 12 years old. For the next 22 years of my life, it was real fun. It just, I wasn't there all the time. I was drunk and ripping and running and yahooing and hoo-yahing and all that stuff and not there. And they told me I had a good time. I don't know. I woke up at home sometimes. Sometimes I didn't. And I didn't know if that was planned or not. What was it like? I can remember walking to grammar school smoking a cigarette. I can remember drinking alcohol at 12 years old. I can remember having sex at 12 years old. Behind, what was it, Moran Liquor Store in the garage. I mean, we're, you know, I'm from Vallejo. We're tough. Jeez, we do it right. I went to junior high school, and I did real good in horseshoe wearing and ramp sliding and girl chasing and all that stuff. I didn't do good in English and home ec and all that other stuff. Then I got into the ninth grade. That's when credits start to acquire. If you don't have enough credits, you don't get promoted. Needless to say, I did the ninth grade over again. Because I was real good in horseshoe sliding and girl looking at and all that stuff. But I wasn't good at English and math and history. So I didn't get enough units, credits. Units are for college, yeah. So I did the ninth grade over again. And at that time, it was in the 60s, in the early 60s. And at that time, the world was going through a change, and I had to go out there to that school. There was a lot of racial bigotry, harassment, your side of town, my side of town, all that stuff. So I had to go out there to school. And, you know, being hip, slick, and cool, and from that side of the town, living up on the hill, having to go out there to school. It was real different, you know, and they bused me out there. And I wasn't used to getting on a bus and riding out to school. So I went out to school for the ninth grade, and I was friends with a lot of people, so when it became time to have riots, Pablo said, I'm not going to have no riot. I don't need to fight Jesus. I might get hurt. And plus that, what am I going to fight for? Bullshit. So I guess the gang told him that he had to beat me up. So I told him, I don't want to fight. Let's just do what we got to do. So he hit me a couple of times. I said, okay, I'm done. So I went to class, and that was my racial endeavor. It was no big deal. Then I went to high school. I went to high school. And in the 10th grade, I just skated through because I was a sweet talker, and I did a little bit of math and a little bit of English and so on and so forth. In my junior year, I passed because I was the captain of the wrestling team, and so in order for me to wrestle, they had to pass me, so I got straight C's. You know, whatever it took to get by. And being the little cocky guy that I was, when the teacher mentioned the fact about me wrestling, I thought, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to double lunches, and I want to chase women, and I want to work on cars, and, you know, I want to be cool. So he finally talked me into it, and I started wrestling, and it was good. It was a good experience for me. I enjoyed it. In the 12th grade, I had done real good in wrestling. I went undefeated, so it wasn't any big deal. So, in the 12th grade, they wanted me to wrestle again because I was winning. It was good for them, you know. So, but I said no because it was no big deal, and I wanted to get into something else. So I got into boxing. I knew one of the kids that I used to run with, his dad was a coach of the boxing team, Mare Island boxing team. So I got into boxing, and I boxed in my senior year. Needless to say, I didn't go to a whole lot of classes. I didn't do a lot of stuff. Went to trade sheet metal. I had trade sheet metal in the 11th grade and the 12th grade. So that's 3 hours in the morning, and then I took a double lunch. Shit, that's the majority of the day. So after I did the 11th grade and got into the 12th grade and was doing that same trade sheet metal shop thing, and then double lunches and then hanging out, needless to say, I didn't graduate. So as they were graduating my class without me, I was driving my 58 Chevrolet, drinking Coors beer and having a good time. I wasn't into dope. I wasn't that bad. You know, I wouldn't. One of them, geez, yeah, well, not until later, geez, until the real stuff got in. My senior year was real laxed. It was real. I didn't show up a whole lot. I showed up for trace sheet metal and double lunches. And I didn't wrestle. I went into boxing. The lady that I was dating became pregnant. So we got married. We lived with her parents. My daughter was born Christmas Eve, which was a great gift. She is now 19 years old and a fox. Called me this morning and said, "Hi, Dad, happy birthday." Ta-ra-ta-ra-ta-ra-ta-ra. Called back 15 minutes later and said, "Hi, Dad, happy birthday. I just want to tell you that I love you, and yeah, you're okay, and it's big time, and get me a medallion." Because my kids get medallions. When I celebrate a birthday, they get medallions also. So I told her that I would, and, you know, told her that I loved her. And I called her back this evening just to say hello to her and tell her thank you for the message. And it was real nice. So that marriage lasted 4.5 years. But during this time, I was ripping and running and taking life easy, so I thought. I was bringing home $4 a week and not crashing the car. Shit, I thought I was doing real good. It was a lot better than I had been doing, Jesus. And Walita, God bless her, she had to go through a lot, I'm sure. I'm sure I put her through a lot. I'm sure I put everybody through a lot. But unbeknownst to me, did I know that I was doing that, as the book says, like a tornado through people's lives. I didn't know that until of late, of just what I had done to them. And I thought at all times that I was doing okay. I thought that I wasn't going to jail and that I wasn't hitting parked cars. And I was doing okay. So she said, well, Pablo, I think I want to get a divorce. I went, oh, no, Jesus, I'm bringing home $4 a week, and I'm not hitting the car, and I'm coming home at night. Jesus, yeah, but you're drunk. Well, come on, be easy with me. So so she said, I think I want to get a divorce, and I said, okay, sure, honey, whatever you want to do. And so she went to the doctor, and she came home, and she said, Pablo, I'm pregnant. I went, oh, no. I said, well, okay, honey, look it. You can... I said, you can do one of two things. I said, you can stay with me and have the baby, or you can go to have an abortion or do what you want to do if you want to do that. She said, no. She said, I want to have the baby. I said, okay, great. I said, I'll stay with you for 9 months, and when you have my son, we'll have no talk of a girl, like I had something to do with it. Well, I did, but I was done with it, you know, everything that I had to do with it. And so I said, when you go to the hospital and have my son, when you come back from the hospital, I'll be gone, and I'll plant your new lawn, and everything will be all right. So she says, okay. So we made it for another 9 months, whatever it was, 7 months, 8 months, whatever it was. And we're okay. And she went to the hospital in January of 81, and she had a son. I was gifted with a son. His name is Gregory Paul. He's now 15 years old. And, yeah, like father, like son, I guess. He's enjoying life. He's venturing out and seeing what's going on. And I talk a lot with him because I see a lot of me in him. Can't understand why. I guess I just relate a lot. So my son was born and I left. I took the car because, you know, I need a car. She wasn't driving at the time anyway. Plus, she had the house. She had her parents, and it was poor Pablo. What am I going to do? And nobody loves me. And, oh, no, what's going to happen? And so I threw all my stuff in the car, and I think I moved to an apartment, to a little house in the alley in Vallejo. And that was fun. That was okay. I was using and abusing and drinking and carrying off and just running amok. And I stayed in the apartment for a while. While Walita and I were going out, let me back up a little bit. Well, before Don Marie was born, we were out, and I had gotten in a stupor, and I hit a parked car. I'm sure you can relate. Parked car jumping out and hitting you. Well, that did that to me, okay? And I went to jail, but I didn't get busted for drunk driving. I got busted for reckless driving or something. I worked for the city, so I guess it was one of my friends. So he just busted me for reckless driving. That was my first time. And then time passed, and then we got divorced, or we separated, and I moved out. And then I was working for the city, and we were separated for a while. And Super Beatles, it was the early 70s, and Super Beatles had come out, so I thought, well, hip, slick, and cool that you are, Pablo, you ought to have one. So I got a Super Beetle, you know, a little low rider, you know, so I didn't have too far to fall if I fell out. And so I bought a little Super Beetle. And I used it for a while. And in my drunkenness, I would drive it around and run amok. One night in one of my drunkenness blackouts, I was 2 miles away from home. And I pulled in front of a car on the highway. I pulled in front of a car. You know, I'm in a blackout. I'm not there, okay? I pulled out in front of a car and she hit me. Boy, she tore that Volkswagen up. That was another time that God was working in my life unbeknownst to me because I didn't have a passenger. Because it took my passenger door and brought it over to me and shook me around like a little rattle and threw me in a ditch. I don't know, a few feet down the road. So the ambulance came and they pried the doors open and they got me out and they took me to the hospital and they told my mom, oh, I don't think he's going to make it because his brain is swelling and his head is going to burst and, you know, all negative stuff, you know. And my mom said, well, you just do what you got to do. He's in God's hands. God will take care of him and quit talking about that negative stuff. 23 days later, 27 days, a long time. Long time later, I was wheeled out of the hospital. During that time, I remember three times. Twice going to therapy to learn how to walk, talk, and eat again. And once, the last time, my brother coming to pick me up. Woke up one day and my brother was there and I said, hi, Danny, how you doing? He said, I'm doing fine. He said, let's go. I said, sure, shit, that's a drag around here. They're not doing nothing. Let's go. So he wheeled me out because they wouldn't let me walk. He wheeled me out and took me in the car and he said, you're going to come home with me. He lives up in Chico. So I went to Chico and stayed for a month or so. Then I came back to Vallejo and I tried to get my job back with the city of Vallejo and they said, no, Pablo, the doctors won't release you and we can't have you back if the doctor doesn't release you. I said, oh, come on, Jesus. I've been out a month. I'm okay, you know. Forgot to how to spell my name. Didn't know where I lived. I was sick. But I thought that I was okay. So they wouldn't give me my job back. A few months passed. I kept bugging them and they wouldn't give me my job back. So I said, well, that's okay. I'll just leave. I'll just retire from the city of Vallejo and I'll just leave. I'll just show you guys. I'll just move out of town. Said it's Vallejo. That's what the problem is. I'll leave Vallejo. So I got my retirement money. And I paid off the majority of my bills. I didn't pay them all off. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I can't be clean. Jesus. So I paid off the majority of my bills. And I put $500 in my pocket, whatever it was, a little amount of money. And I went to Chico. Chico is a college town. They party a little bit. And they have a good time sometimes. And, you know, I'm still trying to learn how to walk, talk, and eat, you know, and I'm just taking it real slow and easy. So I moved up there to a one-room place and I just took it nice and easy and rode my little bicycle around and didn't drink a whole lot. Smoked dope and did all that other stuff, but not a whole lot. as time went on, I got a job at a liquor store, naturally.
Okay.
I had to be at home. Jesus. So I got a job at a liquor store, at Bar X, if anybody's familiar. Chico. And, and I worked there for a while, and, you know, would take my breaks in the cooler and drink a little. It's only natural. Well, I thought it was only natural. Jesus. They owed me a break. They didn't have any coffee. So, a cold beer was okay. So I worked for Bar X for a while. And then I met up with a guy that was he was a landowner up there and he had a lot of property. He was a wealthy man and he had an almond ranch. And so I took care of his ranch. Had 50 acres of land. And I took care of his land. I hired people to work for me and I showed them how to run tractors and not hit trees and shake trees and pick up almonds and do all that stuff on the hot sun. And all this time I'm drinking a little bit and doing a little dope and, you know, social stuff. Not getting in any trouble, mind you. You know, I'm not that bad. It just flashed so I can remember it, or because I remembered it. I was at Canal Street. Canal Street was my hangout up there. I was at Canal Street on my bicycle. I was drinking and using and smoking and carrying on. And I was riding home on my bicycle. And my brother, I would pass my brother's house and I was, cause that was the way home. And some policemen were having a coffee break, you know, they're just sitting in their cars talking. And I went, oh no! I said, I can't pass those guys. I said, I'll turn left in front of them. If I'd have just gone straight, I'd have been alright. I turned left and I hit the curb and I rolled up on the lawn and they said, God! We can't let this guy walk home, and we can't let him ride home. They said, well, we're going to have to arrest you. I went, oh, no. The guy from the house, he came out, and he said, yeah, I'll give him a ride home, man. Don't arrest him. Jesus. The guy gave me a ride home. That was another time God was working in my life, unbeknownst to me. If I had just gone straight, it would have been no big deal. But I thought, and I turned left, I hit that curb and I was on the lawn. I went, oh no, now what? Anyway, where was I? I was working on the farm and hiring people and hanging out at Canal Street and drinking and eating pizza and being okay. So after I, not me. Where am I? I'm on the lawn on the corner of Olive and Policeman. Thanks. I got to ride home already. So that didn't teach me anything, and that didn't do any good. So I got up in a couple of days, and I continued to ride my bike and have a good time. Thank you. And so I just carried on like I knew what I was doing. As time went on, what time of the year was it? I don't know. It must have been summertime. Because I was working in the almonds. You have to let me get my thoughts together, okay? So up in Chico, it gets real warm, so we hang out a lot. So I would go to work real early in the morning, and then I would get off at 2 o'clock or something, the heat of the day, and we would go up in the mountains and sit by the creeks and smoke dope and drink hooch and run around naked and have a good time, you know. And it was all okay. So as time went on. At that time, somebody put out a poster on me saying I was a narcotics agent. And Jesus, I was using and abusing, you know, I wasn't one of them, you know. But somebody put a poster out on me and said that I was a narc, so they put posters up and they put them up all over town. So I ended up suing the guy and taking him to court and running him out of town. But during the course of this time, I had gotten my license back, and I went down to Vallejo, and I had a friend in Vallejo that was the original owner of a 56 Chevrolet, two-door hardtop, power steering, power brakes. Got a padded dash. It was a real nice car, man. I was real jazzed about it. So anyway, I think my Uncle Charlie paid $300 for it, or I paid $300 for it, or whatever. I went down and picked it up, and I brought it back home. And then this poster situation came out on me. So I was down at the club, Canal Street, hanging out with the fellas, having a good time. And this guy was over here talking about, this guy's a narc. Don't drink any hooch with him, and don't smoke no dope, and don't buy no dope, and don't do nothing with him. And I had drank enough beer to where I'd taken enough of it, so I just very kindly went over and poured a pitcher of beer on his lap and told him if he stood up, I would break his face. Now, this is my hangout, so, you know, the manager and everybody came out and said, Pablo, don't do that, because if you do that, we got to call a man. If we call a man, we got to sign a complaint, and then you got to go to jail. And you ain't got no money, get out of jail, and we don't want to loan you no money. Pablo, don't do this. I went, ah. Said, don't stand up, man. I'm gonna hurt you. Luckily, another time God was working in my life, he didn't stand up. Because I really do believe this to this day. I'd have smacked him. So he didn't, and I just told him he ought to shut up because what he was saying wasn't true. So he sat back to where he didn't get up, rather punched him. So I was going to go back to my chair and sit down, so I offered to buy him another pitcher of beer, or another beer, excuse me, and he said, no, I couldn't understand it. I guess maybe he thought I'd pour it on him or something. But he said no. So I went back to my table as a good alcoholic that I am. I finished my beer. Jesus, I can't leave. There's still beer in the pitcher. So I finished my beer. So I went out to my car, and I got in my car. And I was driving down the main street of Chico. And one of those parked cars jumped out and hit me. Just like that one earlier. Yeah, it chuckles. So they came and picked me up. Shit, I was blocking half away from jail. Shit, I could have walked, but they were nice. They came and picked me up. Put some bracelets on me, gave me a ride to jail, put me in jail. They said, Pablo, who are you going to call to come get you? I said, well, Jesus, anybody I know to come get me is drunk. they won't release me to them. I said, who do I say? Call my brother. Maybe he's not drunk. So we called my brother, and I had money because I'd just gotten paid, you know. Shit, I had $48. I don't know what it was. But I had money, but I just needed somebody responsible to come pick me up. Because they wouldn't let me out on the streets by myself. So my brother came and picked me up. And on the way home, it doesn't matter anyway. I got out of jail, and on the way home, for the first time in my life that I can remember that I copped to, that I felt bad, felt self-loathing, no goodness, piece of dirt. What good am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? What am I going to do? Where am I headed? You're no good, Pablo. All that stuff hit me real good. So my brother told me, okay, Pablo, he said, you want to go home and drink some coffee and talk about it? I said, no, I want to go home, get in a corner, beat myself up, talk about poor Pablo. Take me home. He said, okay. So he took me home. For 3 days, I stayed at home and sat on my waterbed and watched the news and poor Pablo and ate. I didn't leave the house, I don't think. Because it was poor Pablo, and what are you going to do, and where are you headed, and what's your life? So after a few days, I got on my bicycle and got back into the mainstream of life. And naturally, I went out back out to take care of the ranch or to do whatever, go down to Toad Hall and take care of Toad Hall, and go back down to Canal Street and talk with the fellas. You know, I had to stay in touch. I might miss something. So life went on that way for a while. And then it was court date time. So I went to court. The judge said, "This is your second 502 within 5 years, Pablo." I said, "Shit, it's been 4 years, 9 months, and 18 days. Doesn't that count?" He said, "No, Pablo, it doesn't count." I thought I had something going on because I was real close. Didn't work. You know, we shoot every angle. You know that as well as I do. So he said, "Okay, Pablo," he said, "what I'm going to have you do?" He said, "I'm going to put you in jail for 90 days. I went, "Oh, no." I said, "Well, shit, the sun's not shining. I can't get a suntan anyway. It's no big deal." He said, he says, "And you have to go to jail for now." He said, "And you have to pay me a $1,000 fine." I went, "Oh, Jesus." I said, "Well, I'll pay you $1 a week. That'll be all right. No big deal." And he says, "And you have to go to AA." I said, "Oh, no, not me." I said, "Can I do some more time or pay you some more money? Come on." He put the gavel down and said, "Get out, go to jail." So I went to jail, needless to say. And as soon as I got to jail, I said, "Hey, I'm not no murderer, no woman beater or nothing." I said, I'm just a drunk. Put me in the trustee tank. I said, "I mow lawns real good." Said, "Wash dishes." I'm not one of them bad guys. I'm a good guy. Put me in the trustee tank. So sure as hell, they put me in the trustee tank, and I got good time, 15 for 95 a month. 15, sorry, I only did 75 days. While I was in there, it was right around Christmas time, so I played one of Santa's little elves and made toys and repaired toys and did all that stuff. And H&I came in, and I thought, "Well, God, I got to go see these lames after I get out for 90 days. I might as well go check it out." So I went and... Somebody's chuckling. So I went to your meetings. At the time I was smoking, so I smoked your cigarettes and listened to you talk out of the side of your neck and didn't drink any coffee. I thought, "Jesus, I gotta do that for 90 days. God, what's gonna happen to me? What'll the fellas think?" So I did my 75 days and I got out. Yeah, that's a Christmas that I didn't spend at home. So I got out and I did my 90 and 90 up on 22nd Street up in Chico. Did my 90 and 90 and went back to court and, "Here, Judge." And he looked at me and he said, "Good boy, Pablo." He said, "No, go out and take care of yourself and don't fall off any curbs and, you know, don't drive. Jesus." So I said, "Okay, bye." So I left and I went out to make my first dollar installment on my $1,000 fine. And this foxy young lady went back to the cabinet and she pulled it out and she looked. She said, "What was your name?" And I told her. And she looked and she said, "God, yeah, Pablo, it's here. I see you did 90 days and, geez, I don't have any record of you owing $1,000. I went, "Oh! Not me, that must have been my cleaning bill or something." I said, "I gotta go, bye." And I left. And that was another time God was working in my life because I didn't have to pay a cent on that. That was, God's real good to Bob. So as time went on, I got back into using and abusing because nobody was chasing me and it was okay and everything was sort of kind of okay. And I wasn't falling off my bicycle. And it was all right because I knew how to balance myself real good, I guess. because I'd ridden it so much. I don't think that I after my 90 meetings, the seed was planted, okay? It was for me to do with that seed whatever I wanted to. I could throw dirt on it and just bury it. Or I could water it and watch it flower into a loving, giving person, a responsible person of life. For 6 years, I chose to throw dirt on it and bury it. During this time, I went back to Chapmantown. I worked at another store, liquor store. We sold a lot of liquor there in the neighborhood where I lived. And this lady walked in, and I fell in love when she walked in through the door. She went and got her bottle of Red Ripple or whatever it was. What, you know, I don't know what it was. Blue Nun or something. I don't know. Because she was a college girl, okay? And she didn't drink what I drank. And when she came up to the counter, I told her, yeah, when you check out, come see me. So she came up to check out, and I grabbed her. I grabbed one of her hands with my hand, and I held onto her hand. I took her money and did what I had to do and gave her money. I told her, look it, I gave her explicit direction to my house. I said, look it, if you go out here and take a left and go to the corner and go straight down, and where the street turns left and you go straight, I said, you'll run right into my house. I said, look it, there's a notepad there. If I'm not home, leave me a note. I said, but come see me. She said, God. I said, yeah, that's right, come see me. A few days later, she came by. She left a note, and she came back up by the store, and she asked me out for a date, and she took me home and fixed me dinner, and then we went to play, and so on and so forth. Started seeing each other. We lived with each other for, well, I guess, the rest of that year, and then she moved to Yuba City, and she moved, and I stayed in Chico, because I had a $45 a month mansion. It was great. It had a skylight in it and everything. It was big time. So she went to Yuba City and I stayed there, using and abusing and running amok. Then she was going to go over to Fort Bragg and go to work. I would go see her. She would come get me and we would do whatever we had to do. And she was going to move to Fort Bragg, so we went over to Fort Bragg to confirm a job for her, and she confirmed it, and then came back to Yuba City, and all this time I didn't say anything about, yeah, well, what about me? What am I going to do? Oh, no, poor Pablo. I didn't, you know, it was no big deal, because I had the nice place in Chico, and I lived in a nice part of town, and I was cool, so it was no big deal. So finally she said, yeah, Pablo, why don't you move over there with me? And one day while we were at home brushing our teeth, I told her, I said, look it, not today. I said, but whenever you want to get married, I said, ask me first. She says, okay. So we moved over to Fort Bragg and I was hanging up the mailbox drinking a Michelob. And she said, Pablo, remember? I went, oh no. She said, let's get married. I went, oh no. She said, get in the car. I said, oh no. So we ran off, well, yeah, we ran off to Tahoe or wherever it was, and we got married. And we stayed in Fort Bragg for a couple years, I guess it was. But while we were in Fort Bragg, we were in Fort Bragg a year, maybe. And then March 6th of 1981, I was helping a friend of mine build a fence, dig a ditch, do whatever. I don't know what it was. It's something physical. And his wife asked me, you want a beer, Pablo? I said, no, geez, I've been sober 14 days. Ah, shit, I got it made now. I went back to digging the ditch or doing whatever it was. God, Pablo, you can drink a beer. A beer wouldn't hurt you. You're big time, and it's hot out here, and you're sweating. And God, go get a beer. My committee, so they say. And I went, That's right. Shit, I got it under control now. Shit, I've been sober 14 days. So I went back up to the door. I said, sure. I said, let me have a beer. When I took a drink of the beer, remember how I told you I felt when I got out of jail and my brother was taking me home about the self-loathing and the dirtiness and the ugliness and all that stuff? That hit me 17 times as heavy when I took a drink of that beer. I believe why it did that to me is because I had been introduced to a program and things had been given to me. They've been explained to me that I didn't have to do that anymore if I didn't want to. I thought, Jesus, Pablo, you don't have any control. You can't do anything about it. You're powerless. Oh, no. Yeah, Pablo, you are. The good alcoholic I am, I finished the beer. Picked up my tools, jumped in my 49 Chevrolet pickup truck, and went home. Told Patricia, she was in the kitchen. I told Patricia, look it, leave me alone, do what you got to do. I'm going in the bedroom, leave me alone. I went in there and felt real bad. Logical thinking for Pablo at the time. I cannot surrender to God with beer on my breath. I have to wait until tomorrow. So, March 7th of 1981, I surrendered. I turned my will and my life over to care of God as I understand Him. From that day to this day, I haven't found it necessary to drink alcohol or get out of a ditch or think all that negative stuff. And my life is better today. Since surrendering, Patricia got a job down here in San Jose, and so naturally I followed her because I was her husband, and she was making the money. And so, that's right. Take care of me. So we came down here, and for about a month I didn't get connected to any of the programs. So I finally got connected to Winchester. And our marriage was sort of kind of on the rocks. I thought it was fine. Shit, I was sober and everything was good with me, but she wasn't going anywhere or doing anything. She, you know, so we got a divorce. And I got out and I got into another one-room place. I'm a one-room place man. Well, not that much to take care of, and you know, has a big bed in it, and has my chest of drawers, and has a TV, and has a book stand, and has all that microwave, has all that important stuff. So I moved in there, and then I got involved in the program. From then to now, my life has gotten immensely better. I have become a participant of my life. I'm involved in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Jack H. is going to have, he just had 28 years, Wednesday or Thursday, just had 28 years of sobriety. He told me something that I had never heard. He said, there are rim runners in this program. And what the hell's a rim runner? I was a rim runner for 6 years, unbeknownst to me, though. A rim runner is somebody who sort of kind of goes to meetings, sort of kind of drinks, sort of kind of gets in jail, sort of kind of sleeps on the couch, sort of kind of lives, sort of kind of dies, you know, sort of kind of. And it just, that was a shitty life. He said, either you're on the rim of the program, he said, or you're in the program. Today I'm in the program. I've learned in the 6 years that I was out experimenting and being a student of this program, I took a lot of notes, and I did a lot of investigating and checking it out, and sort of kind of drinking and sort of kind of going to meetings and, you know, sort of kind of getting divorced and sort of kind of hanging around and all that stuff. It has all come to light for me today. All of my teachings, all that you have taught me is right here at my access. All I have to do is just think about it, and I can share it with you. Or go to the book. The answers are in the books. In the first 164 pages of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, all of your answers are there. This is a simple program for complicated people. What does that mean? Get out of the way. Accept the program for what it is. Be good to yourself. You are worth it. You know, I don't care what you think about you. You are okay. We're all children of God, and God does not make junk. Real simple. If you think you're junk, it's because you got negative thinking in your head. Take the negative out and fill it with positive. And join us as we tread this road of happy destiny. It's real tough, too. I mean, God, I got to go to Hawaii. I have to go to Canada. Got to go to Jamaica. Yeah, that's a trip that's happening. Got to go to Monterey. Went to Manteca. That's right. It's a big-time place, man. They want me to come around, you know. Yeah, big time. I'm going to do the pig out in July or June or whenever it is. They want Pablo to speak at a pig out, man. There's the guy, it's big, you know. The guy said, yeah, Pablo, there's about 1,500 people. Oh, no. Tell me, I got to talk in front of all those people. He said, yeah, Pablo, but they're your brothers and sisters. They won't throw shit at you. You'll be okay. I got it in my calendar, so I'm going to go up and do it. Today my life is, I have to go to work because I'm not a millionaire. So I go to work on a daily occurrence. Jeez, they give out bonuses at work. If you're not absent in a 3-month period, they give you so much money. Excuse me. So I have gotten a bonus. I've been there 4 years, 4 years in June, and I've only missed like 3 or 4 times. So that's real good for Pablo. When I, Wally can relate to this. I never go to work on Monday. They'd ask me what I was doing at work if I showed up on Monday. Hey, that Pablo, what happened to that Mexican coal, man? Don't you have it today? And you know as well as I do, I was just hung over. I couldn't move. And Fridays were half days or get off right after coffee break because I got to go. Where are you going? I don't know, but I got to go. Happy hours at Flamingo Joe's. That's right. That's a club up in Vallejo. My life has gotten immensely better today. I'm a participant of my life, and all I have to do in order to keep it is to give it away. That means that I gotta show up in Manteca to talk. Cause you guys got such a thrill out of Manteca, I thought I'd throw that at you again. I have to go to the pig out. I have to be of service. I have to pick up ashtrays. I have to make coffee. I have to talk. I have to do things. It's an honor today to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Look, and I'm 5 years old today. And that's a gift, okay? I mean, everybody's got today. That's what's happening. But I got 5 years of today, which is great. In the room right now, there's people that love me. May not like me, but love me. Would help me if I asked for help. Would go to Manteca with me if I asked to go to Manteca. Would help me talk at Manteca if I asked them to talk. Would drive from Vallejo to see me, unbeknownst to me. I don't know, that means a lot to me. Okay? I would be real foolish to tell you anything other than my life is much, much better today than it has ever been. My best today has not happened as your best today has not happened. If you were to make a list of 10 things that you want for you to happen, positive things, no negative, all that's bullshit, excuse me. Positive things for you to happen in the next year. I want to have a new house. I want to buy a car. I want to get that solid job at IBM. I want to be able to have my fly mow lawnmower work. I want to be able to have that stinking dog not bite me when I walk in the house. All that stuff. If you made a list of 10 things that you would want to do, in 3 months, you would have to add things to it because some things on that list you would have. We have a direction today. We're on the sidewalk today. It does not matter. How many newcomers was there? 11. It doesn't matter for you 11 newcomers if today is your first day here. Because today is the first day of the rest of your life. Yesterday is a canceled check. Tomorrow's a promissory note. And today is cash money. Spend the money. We all got a dollar and nickel in our pocket. If you got any money or not, doesn't matter. You got a dollar and a nickel. Because you're here. You're a participant of your life. You're trying to do something with your life today. You're not out there ripping and running and sleeping under the tree where it's wet because it's raining. You're here where it's dry. You're drinking good coffee. You're enjoying people. It's warm. You're a participant of your life. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I don't care what you think about you. You're okay. We all have a direction. Stay on the path and stay with us. All you got to do is show up. Don't worry about, but Pablo, I don't understand. And Pablo, what about, when am I going to get that? And Pablo, don't worry about any of that stuff. Just bring the body. Don't worry about nothing. Just bring the body. I don't know that you need help. I don't know that you want to talk. I don't know anything that's going on in your head. If your ass is sucking plaster, holding the wall on, talking about, I'm fine, get away from me, I don't want any coffee. Okay. Yeah, get your own. You got to talk to us. You got to open up. You got to let us know. I can only speak for myself. My phone rings, I answer it. Okay? If I can be of service, I will. If I gotta go to Manteca, I'll get some help and we'll go. Yeah, if I gotta go to Jamaica, be of service, I will. If I gotta go to Canada, be of service, I will. I'm overpaid, as I said before. My best day hasn't happened. Today was a real good day. Today was a real good day. I had a couple of flat tires, took care of them, missed a few hours of work. It was okay. Got to work, did what I had to do. My committee started about my flat tires. I told them, no, don't do that. Contemplated. God, say it. Contemplated watching something and shooting somebody. Excuse me. And I went, God, Pablo, no! You're not that well, huh? What's happening? Maybe you ought to talk about it, Pablo. Maybe you ought to think about not doing that. But that, you know, I'm not an apostle as of yet. But I'm a lot better than I was. If you want what we have, what do you got? I'm sober today. I'm sober today. That's all I got, okay? Today's the only thing I got. I'm sober today. I'm in a room full of people that love me. May not like me, does not matter. Love me. Would help me if I asked for help. Would help me if I asked for help. All I'd have to do is say help. You would, just because you're here. You're in the boat. You're in sobriety. We're all in the boat together. What we got to do is throw the water out so it doesn't sink. We all are here. We're all survivors. We're going to make it today. Shit, we only got 2 hours and 5 minutes to make it until today, and then it's over. No big deal. No big deal. Anybody can stay sober for 24 hours. If you can't do it for 24 hours, do it for 18 minutes. No big deal. 18 minutes and 18 minutes and 18 minutes. Before you know it, you got 24 hours. get off the rim Alcoholics Anonymous and get in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. If any of you newcomers do not have a big book Alcoholics Anonymous, get one. Okay? The stories are real racy. You don't need them. Not now. Stay in the first 164 pages of the big book Alcoholics Anonymous and save your ass. Excuse me. You are the best you you have ever been today, right now. And you're just starting. It's going to get better yet. What do I want to leave you with? Nice, positive, good stuff. When I was in Flamingo Joe's, rolling dice, losing, winning, and having a good time, I never thought that I would ever be where I am today. Today, I drive a Mexican Cadillac that's bought and paid for. I have a job that I've been with 3.5 years that give me monthly, well, quarterly bonuses that I call up in the morning and say, I have a flat tire. I won't be in for a while. They say, don't worry about it, Pablo. Just take care of yourself. I get calls there that I have to go on 12-step calls and nobody, my immediate boss isn't around, but the president of the company comes around. I tell him I got to go. I got to go help an alcoholic. He says, go, Pablo. Take as much time as you want. I never used to have any of that stuff. I have $1.50 in my pocket. I have friends. I'm going to go out rocking and rolling. Tomorrow night, I'm going to go to a theater. Sunday night, I'm going to do 400 West. Monday night, I'm going to do Joy of Living. I got material things. I got a brand new big book today. I did. That's right. And I got a brand new big book cover today. That's right. that means a lot to Pablo. I don't want to be too big time, but we got to show it to him. Can you see it glitter? Yeah. All right. Yeah. A gold 5-year medallion. Is that big time or what? I don't know if you know it or not. That's big time. Somebody loves me, cares about me. I'm the best me I've ever been, and I'm going to get better tomorrow. Yesterday I was real good. Today I'm okay myself. Tomorrow I'm going to be better. I don't care what you think about you. 11. I don't care what you think about you. You're okay. When this guy comes up and tells you that you're no good, slap him. Put a foot in his ass and throw him out because he's negative. Get rid of him. You're okay. I don't care what you think about you. You're okay. Fill your head with positive. Bring your ass here and put it in a seat because your seat is bought and paid for. If anybody ever gives you any question about the seat that you're sitting in, send them to me. That's right. You have earned your seat. You are worth it. Stay here. It's easier to stay sober than it is to get sober. We have brothers and sisters out there that are researching for us. We don't have to go out there, for God's sakes. And plus that, we've got it all right here in 164 pages. That's all we got to do. All we got to do is read the book. All we got to do is answer our phone. All we got to do is go to Manteca. All we got to do is say yes. All we got to do is empty ashtrays. All we got to do is buy raffle tickets. All we got to do is enjoy life. All we got to do is be happy, joyous, and free. All we got to do is show up. All we got to do is be a service. All we got to do is be here. All we got to do is show up. All we got to do is enjoy our life. That's all you got to do. Bring the body. The head will follow. I don't care what you think about you. You don't have a vote. You are okay. We are all children of God. God does not make junk. And if God scares you, the bottle will bring you back. Third step of our program says, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Took me 6 years. On that day, I got up out of bed and went outside and surrendered to God in front of God and everybody and the neighbors. I said, God, I'm yours. Help me. At our feet, He lays a set of spiritual tools. All you have to do is reach down and pick them up. You're about to embark on a journey which you never thought imagined. Well, hang on to your ass and show up because you're okay. And it only gets better. And God loves you and I love you. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.